Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And tonight, I am pleased to announce that I have as my guest, Scott Schwartz, who is the Artistic Director for Bay Street Theater. Hi, Scott. How are you tonight?
Hey, John. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Fantastic. You know, I'm so happy you made it. And I also want to wish you a happy 4th. And speaking of dates, you have the Bay Street Gala coming up. And this is the last time it'll be on Long Wharf, correct?
That's correct. Yes, it's our last one on the Long Wharf.
So can you tell us the date and why is this the last time the gala is going to be on Long Wharf?
Sure. It is July 7th this year in Sag Harbor. And the reason it's the last time it's on the Long Wharf is the town that owns the Long Wharf now is going to be doing a big renovation. And as part of that renovation, they're no longer going to allow events to be on the Long Wharf because they want to, you know, protect it and protect all the new work they're doing. So we're very grateful to them for letting us, having been there for 27 years now. And next year we'll be somewhere else fabulous.
So we'll be again, but do you think that you'll ever come back to Long Wharf or you don't know at this moment?
I guess you never know what'll happen in the future. The town has said that they are, at this point, not going to allow big events to be on the Long Wharf. I'm sure there'll be smaller events, but nothing that involves setting up a huge tent and a dance floor. I mean, it's a huge, major event, and it's so beautiful. I mean, you're outside, and the sun is setting, and there's entertainment and dancing and an auction. I mean, I actually think it's one of the most beautiful events in the Hamptons
I agree
all
with that.
Summer.
Yep.
So we're sorry it's our last year, but I already have some ideas cooking for next year.
I bet. So what exactly is the mission of having the gala?
Well, as you know, Bay Street Theater is a not-for-profit theater, and what that means is that we depend upon donations and community support in order to keep ourselves going and keep doing the great work we do. So the mission of the gala is to raise money to support Bay Street Theater, and specifically to support our educational programs, which we have a lot of, and our community outreach programs. What you may not know is we have partnerships all year round with many, many local organizations that use our theater and that we work with to give them space to perform in. So it's to support those programs specifically.
Well, it sounds like a very good cause. So you mentioned you're going to have a lot of celebrities on the dais and also performing. And who might they be?
Well, we have an amazing lineup of talent. The theme of this year's gala is a celebration of the golden age of Broadway, which is all those great songs, Rodgers and Hammerstein, Jerome Kern, George Gershwin. And so we've lined up wonderful performers. Our MC is Jane Lynch, the brilliant comedian, of course, from Glee and
fabulous.
Best in Show.
Yep.
She's also going to sing something. You know, she's a very good singer.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so she's going to do a number. So we're thrilled to have Jane with us. We have Robert Fairchild, who is a former principal dancer at New York City Ballet, and he was the star of An American in Paris on Broadway. We have Richard Kind, who's done our gala many times, who's our celebrity auctioneer and is also going to do a number. We have Howard McGillin, the Broadway star, the longest running Phantom of the Opera ever in Phantom of the Opera, will be performing. A wonderful young African-American performer named Fire Hawkins is going to sing a song called Come Rain or Come Shine. It's a well-known song from St. Louis Woman, which was, I believe, the first all-African-American show on Broadway during the Golden Age.
I wasn't aware of that. That's...
She's going to perform, and we're going to have a big chorus and other entertainers as well. It's really going to be a star-studded night, and I think maybe our best show ever for a gala.
It sounds that way. Boy, that sounds great. So just for curiosity's sake, can you give us a little bit about your background and how you were drawn to the East End?
Sure. My relationship with the East End is pretty much lifelong. When I was quite young, my parents went on a vacation for my mother's birthday to Gurney's, and they fell in love with it so much, Gurney's out in Montauk, that they bought a timeshare there. I think I was 7 years old, something like that. And then every year, it was in December, so it was always in the winter, we would go out to Gurney's. We would stay, my sister and I, on the weekends, and my mom and dad would stay.
It gets a little blustery in December, doesn't it?
So beautiful, and you know, everything was still open, and you know, we'd go into Sag Sag Harbor and East Hampton and other towns. And usually it was right at the beginning of December, so most of the shops were still open. But I've been coming out my whole life, but always in the winter. And then when this opportunity at Bay Street came along, I joined the theater 5 years ago. I was so excited to really make this my home.
Yeah, well, I'm glad it is your home. One of the things you have that's coming up shortly is the Frost and Nixon. It's a play, correct?
Yes, it's a play by Peter Morgan, the guy, the writer who created the TV show The Crown. That's a wonderful play about Richard Nixon and Robert Frost and the famous interviews they did and sort of how those came to be.
Was that the one that Langella originally was on Broadway with?
Yes, it was on Broadway 11 years ago, and Frank Langella won the Tony Award for it, in fact, and then they made a movie of it as well. But the show, I think, is even more timely than ever. It's such a wonderful play. It's fun, actually, and energetic and kind of thrilling. It's a bit of a political thriller.
I hope there's still some tickets left.
There are some tickets left, but they are selling, so I'm really excited. Tonight is our first performance.
Oh, that is great. So now your family is steeped in the arts. Your father, Stephen, had composed a number of successful musicals. For example, Pippin, Wicked, Godspell, The Magic Show. So growing up, did you ever think about becoming a composer yourself?
You know, I didn't really think about being a composer. I did take piano lessons, and from what I'm told, I was pretty good. But I stopped studying piano when I was pretty young to pursue other things. But I've always been deeply interested in the theater and was lucky enough to discover directing very, very early. It was actually while I was in high school.
And was that when you first came to the realization this is something that you really wanted to do?
Yes. I think as a kid, like many people who end up in theater or movies or, you know, the performing arts, I thought I wanted to be an actor. So, of course, I did community theater stuff and shows with other kids and at my schools, and I always loved it. But then I got lucky enough that my drama teacher in high school saw something, I guess, in me and allowed me to direct some of the productions in high school. And I totally fell in love with it and knew from there on out that that's what I wanted to do.
So was he like your mentor?
I was actually a she. Her name is Ruth Leibowitz. She's still with us. She's an amazing woman. She now lives in California. And she would certainly be one of my mentors. You know, she was a very creative woman. She was from West Virginia. She had been a Joffrey dancer, and she loved improv, and she loved theater games, and really taught me a lot about what theater can be.
Briefly, we have a few minutes left. What do you see for the future of Bay Street?
Well, I see real growth. You know, over the past 5 years, we've been seeing such a huge upswing in our audience, in enthusiasm around the theater. The level of artists we're getting, it has been going up and up and up. We're constantly getting Tony Award winners, Academy Award winners to work at the theater. We're doing a lot of new work. So I see even more new work, even more great revivals of modern and older classics and musicals, and, you know, continuing to expand our year-round programming. Because that's the other thing to realize. We actually are in operation year-round. We don't do our full theatrical productions all year-round, but we do have events every weekend, and being a part of the community is so important to us. So I think there'll be more and more of that.
How can people get tickets, at least to the gala?
There are two ways. You can go to our website, baystreet.org. You can also call the offices at Bay Street and call Kim Fink, who's the director of development. Again, that's Kim Fink. And our offices are 631-725-0818. And Kim can also help you out.
Scott Schwartz, it's been a delight having you on the program. This is John Christopher of Real Life, broadcasting on the only NPR station on Long Island. And we'll be right back after this short intermission with restaurateur John DeLeo. Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I have with me John DeLeo, who is a restaurateur. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me here today.
Oh, it's a delight to have you, John. One of my favorite restaurants which you operate is the Flying Goat in Shelter Island. But before we talk about that, How did you get into the restaurant business? Does your family?
No, I have none of my family. I was in the wholesale travel business for almost 30 years and got out of it in 2005. And I was at a point where I wanted to do something different. Huh. And from that, I always fancied myself as a short order cook. I wanted to do that. And
you mean that was like a goal or something?
Yeah, it wasn't
that you...
a goal. It was just something I liked to cook a little bit, but I had no training or anything. And I took a bid on Cooper's Beach here in Southampton, and I got the concession and ran that for 3 years and got a bug. And from that, I have 6 concessions and the restaurant now in Shelter Island.
That is fabulous. So in other words, this wasn't something that, like, when you were a kid saying, someday, you know, like, you see these programs, to be a chef or whatever, you know, that...
This was not planned at all.
It just was like a happenstance?
It just happened to work out that way, and at a time in my life where I wanted to do it, and I've enjoyed doing it ever since. Been doing it for 12 years now.
Wow. Well, all I can say, I haven't been to the Cooper Beach, but I know I've been to the Flying Goat, and it's fabulous. So
yeah, this is our second year there. Mm-hmm. We're very happy to be on Shelter Island. It's a great spot. The restaurant is in a New York State historical building, so it's got a lot of charm to it, and most of the seating is outside on the veranda. So
I know it's lovely because it goes around the whole building itself, almost, right?
Almost big wraparound deck, and it seats as many inside and out as 95 people.
Wow! Now, can you see Connecticut on a clear day from there?
If you stand on the chair and lift up 1 foot, you can see it. Yeah, you can see it. You can.
No, the views are exquisite. You know, it's kind of interesting because I had lived on Shelter Island years ago, and it was basically a place where you go and have burgers and chips or whatever, but now you've made it into something that's really special. Who is your chef, by the way?
My chef is a man named Thomas Riddlinger. He's a local Shelter Island person who's been doing this for many years. He's worked at many different places, but basically has really come into his own, given him full authority to do what he wants to do in the restaurant, and he's really talented, and the people love the food there.
Yeah, it's true. I do. You know, I can vouch for it. It's fabulous. You know, what's kind of interesting is that you say this will be your second year there?
Yes.
So I guess it's like anything, you know, people, it's word of mouth, people find out about the place, and I don't think people think when they go to Shelter Island, they're not saying, oh, let's go to Flying Goat as the destination, they think of other restaurants.
Sure. It's been a challenge for us because there have been several people there before us, and most of the restaurateurs prior to us would stay 1 year, and they'd be out for one reason or another, and we're unable to make it go. But we've gotten a good following from the local people, the Shelter Island people, and we advertise a lot, and we're starting to get a lot of people come from different areas on the East End. And it's a good destination, too. You want to come for the day, or you just want to come and have a bite to eat. It's a great spot.
Now, you can also golf there, correct?
Yes. Right. They have a 9-hole golf course. It's the Shelter Island Country Club, and part of it's called also affectionately Goat Hill. And that's how we came up with the name The Flying Goat.
I was going to ask you that. Yeah. That's interesting. Ah, that makes sense. So you can get access from either ferry, right?
Sure.
People come from either the South Fork, they would take the South Ferry, or they could come from Greenport, I guess.
Absolutely. So we have a lot of people coming now from the North Fork, which wasn't, you know, it's part of a process. We also run Wildwood State Park. There's 3 concessions there, and that's on the North Fork. So we do a little advertising over there for that place. At the same time, we let them know about the Flying Goat. So people come over from Matatuck, Cupsog, and a number of other places, Southhold. And it's good. We enjoy it, and it's a fun place.
Yeah, it is fun. Mm-hmm. You have a great crew there, by the way.
Yeah, I've got a woman that's, her name is very familiar to the island, Joanne Picozzi. Her family's been on Shelter, and they may have invented Shelter Island.
Right, exactly.
And she's the general manager, runs the place, and I give all the credit to our success to her because she's really done a good job. She runs it as though it's her own. In fact, sometimes I have to look and see who's in charge there because if I want to do something, I have to ask her first.
Sounds like Joanne.
Yes.
Now, what do you think makes your place, the Flying Goat, so different from, say, the other restaurants?
Well, the other place, I think our food is as good. We put it up against anybody's because Tom is really talented. The food is excellent, but we give people, it's almost like being at home eating on your own porch, except you don't have to do the dishes and you don't have to cook it. It's very laid back. You can sit outside, and in the summertime, it's a great spot to sit outside. And it's one of the prettiest views on the, it's the highest spot in Shelter Island. It has some of the prettiest views on both the South and the North Fork. So it gives you a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
That makes us a little unique. And you can also, like you said, play golf if you want to.
Right.
So you can play golf, come in and have lunch, have a couple of drinks, whatever you want.
Yeah, and it's great. And speaking of drinks, you have a great bartender there.
Yes, Robert. Robert is, I'd be remiss not in saying, Robert is our head bartender and really runs the place very well and is well-liked. He's another person that's been on Shelter Island forever, and everybody knows him. He knows, you know, it's like the kind of place where everybody knows your name.
Right.
And that's Robert. He's done a great job for us.
I know. He's fantastic. Now, you were saying about Richard. Is that correct? The chef.
Did he?
Tom, I'm sorry. What was his name again? I'm sorry.
Tom Ridlingham.
Okay, maybe that's where
Ritzler,
I got
it. I'm sorry.
Right, okay. Anyway, did he have any, like, training from...
He did. He's trained, I don't recall where from, but he also lived in Miami and worked with some people in some great clubs down and also learned how to speak Spanish, which is comes in very handy. So sometimes you go in the kitchen and I don't know whether we're speaking Spanish, cooking Italian food or what we're doing because there's all kinds of language. But he's got formal education. I think he went to the culinary school in, I believe, Syosset, and then spent time in Florida. So he's got a number of years under his belt.
Now, do you ever run, like, specials?
Absolutely, every day.
Every day?
Every day we have some sort of special. Tom's one of his favorites is and does very well is fresh fish. We do lunch specials in season. And every Thursday night we have a lobster bake. So it's a special price, and people come in and they love it.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, and we also, you know, we like to have children, too. We have a children's menu, and someone wants just a bite. You know, we have a bar menu and lunch menu and a dinner menu. So when you're asking what makes it special is that we have something for everyone.
Yeah, it sounds that way. I just say that the view is incomparable. I mean, it's just great. You sit out on the porch. You get the breeze, especially in the summertime. So air conditioning is like, you know, why even have it? And the food is fantastic.
And you can come. It's a casual place. We welcome you if you come in a tuxedo, and we welcome you if you come in your flip-flops.
Right.
So whatever, however you want it, if you feel comfortable, we'll be happy to take you in and welcome you.
Well, how can, is there a website or a phone number that people
sure.
can go and make a reservation?
You can give us a call anytime at 631-749-5404. Or our webpage is flyinggoatrestaurant.com.
Oh, that's easy
enough. It usually has our menus on there and any specials that we have that night.
Well, you're going to see me definitely now that I know you have the lobster bake on Thursdays.
Thursday.
I'm going to be there for sure.
We look forward to it.
Great. John, it's been John DeLeo. It's been a pleasure having you on the program. This is John Christopher, and we'll be right back after the short break with our next guest, Judge Edward Burke of the Senior Law Partner of Burke & Sullivan. Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life, and today I have as my guest Judge Edward Burke, who is the Senior Law Partner of Burke and Sullivan. Hi, Judge. How are you today?
John, very well. Thank you very much for having me on and share a few moments with you.
Oh, that's great. I'm so happy. Now, listen, Judge, I know you've had quite a legal career, and now your children have followed in your footsteps. Do you also come from a legal family, or was going into law something you wanted to do? And when did you decide you wanted to follow a career in law?
Well, just as a little background, right? I've spent 22 years on the bench, 8 years in Supreme Court, right? And the other 15 years or so over here as a Southampton Town Justice in between 1994 up until 2015. And I enjoyed every moment of it. As a town judge, I could practice law with Burke and Sullivan, right, which has been over here for the last 50 years. And state judge, I couldn't practice. That was between 2000 and 2008. But Yes, my children have followed me, and we'll talk about them in a few moments, right? But I was the first in my family, right, to being the oldest, to get a college education. And during that time, right, I had an opportunity, right, to meet many people. I was an iron worker, right, mm-hmm. out of Local 40 right. in New York, right?
But this was while you were going to school? You were an iron worker?
Right.
Wow.
From 1960 when I was in school, right, and before I went into college. I was at St. John's University and St. John's Law School. Raising a family, living in Brooklyn in those days, right? With two children at that time, and Joseph came a little bit later. But I had that opportunity. I went to Chaminade High School over in Mineola. Met a lot of brothers who were there. A couple of them were lawyers, and one of them gave me a saying which has always said to me or remained with me by John Updike. It was a quote. It was actually a love quote, but they changed it. And it goes something like that. It's easy to love or judge people in memory. The hard thing is to judge or love them when they are in front of you. So think about it, right? And that always struck me. I would have to, well, if I became a lawyer, right, or a judge, which I did, right, to judge people, right, as they stood in front of me instead of remembering them or relating the experiences. But that was something I wanted to do, and that helped me follow my career in law, St. John's Law School, and then off you go.
Right. Well, you know, the thing I was thinking you brought up about how, especially from your quote there, is how was it for you being a judge, you know, because we come from such a small community where everybody seems to be interrelated with everybody else. When somebody would come before you, was that a difficult, and you knew, say, the father, or you knew the brother, or whoever in the family, was that a difficult situation because, you know, you're weighing some of, you know, these people, and by the same token, you're trying to do the right thing. So how does it work?
Well, being a judge, you have the two litigants leave the courtroom after you make a decision, right, or a sentence, and one would say, what a great judge that is. The other one would say, where did that judge come up with that idea? You know, so there's always a 50-50 formula or balance that you have to try to do when you sit on the bench. But the interesting thing, as you bring up, right, is the local people. Yes, a small community. Sag Harbor in it today is 3,000 people. I think the population in the town is maybe close to 40 now. But
it's grown quite a bit, right?
Oh, it's grown awful lot, right? You used to be able to drive down Main Street in Sag Harbor and know everybody in January, February, and June and July, but now you know nobody, as you know, right?
That's amazing.
It's absolutely amazing, right? But it's a resort area. We rely on all of the folks from, as the old Bonnickers used to say, they're from away. Where are they from? They're from away, bub. So
sometimes they are away.
They're away. They're here today especially at the U.S. Open, let me tell you.
Right.
Just getting here is an adventure.
Oh.
But interestingly enough, right, it isn't as bad as you might think. But going into a restaurant in the evening, right, whether it be the Corner Bar or over at Bobby Vann's or over here at the Plaza Cafe, inevitably you'd run into somebody that was involved with you as either a lawyer or as a judge. If you sentence them, it might be a little difficult. You'd leave a little earlier.
It's fascinating how so many parents wish that their children would follow in their footprints, and how many children do not. But you were blessed to have such wonderful children, Joe, Denise, and Ed Burke Jr., do just that. And they've become attorneys themselves, and they're fantastic as attorneys. How do you think that came about? I mean, did you have some guiding hand in that, or was it just something that happened?
If anybody had a guiding hand, it was Carol, the mother, and she got us all through. She insists she had four children, me and the three other lawyers. But anyway, they were raised in the restaurant business. As you know, we had a restaurant out in Noyak for many years.
The Salty Dog you're talking
salty
about.
Salty Dog, the Waterside. It was the old Noyak Casino many years before that. But they grew up in the restaurant business. I was practicing law and working in the restaurant business, and they decided, I think it would be easier to go to law school, right, than continue in the restaurant business, and they did.
Denise, so was it hands-on with the kids? Yeah. I mean, were they involved, like, waiting and...
Absolutely hands-on, whether it was Eddie in the kitchen or Denise working on the floor or Joseph as a busboy back in those days and as a waiter, Eddie bartending. Denise went on, got her education at St. John's, or Providence, went to St. John's Law School, became a town attorney in Hempstead, went on to the Zoning Board of Appeals and the ARB, the Architectural Review Board here in Southampton, that practices a real estate practice with us. Joseph, the youngest one, right, he's also wanted to get his education right in land use and real estate. So he was an assistant town attorney here in Southampton for 6 years before he went into private practice. Eddie wanted to take over my criminal practice that I had in the 70s and the 80s and early 90s. He went into the district attorney's office, Suffolk County DA's office, and got his education, his master's degree, if you will, practicing with them.
Was that through your recommendation with the kids to say, look, this is a good way, you get your internship, and then you move on?
Well, it was the same as the restaurant. If we're going to continue with the restaurant, which we didn't, we took it down in 2004. But if in fact, right, you want to continue in the restaurant business, right, well, then this is what it is. Go to work, learn every facet of it. If you want to go into law, Ed, go to the DA's office after you get out of law school. He went to Providence and also to St. John's. Joseph went to Emerson up in Boston, and he went to New York Law School. And he also, he played with the idea of getting into the media business, right? But he came back home, as all of our youngsters seem to do when they leave town. They come back home, and he's now practicing right down the street at 41 Meeting House Lane.
That's fantastic. So that leads me into the question of what drew you to the Hamptons initially? How did you get out here?
Well, the Burke family goes back several generations in Sag Harbor. As you know, we have Burke Street right by the Watchtower, or the old boulevard. And that was Michael Burke, and that was back in the 1840s. There was a Burke that fought in the in the Revolutionary War. We haven't checked out what side he was on, but anyway.
But he was on somebody's side, right?
He was on somebody's side. But what happened, my mother was the oldest of 10. They were potato farmers up in Prince Edward Island. But she was born in Maine. And when she reached 18, she was informed that she could come to the States. She had one relative in the United States, and that was Winnie McElane, who had a delicatessen, McElane's in Noyak, which is now Jimmy Jim's, you've been doing, John.
Of course, yeah.
And she came here in 1936 and started work for Winnie and McElane.
That's fascinating. I'm going to have you come back again. Unfortunately, we've run out of some time. But how could somebody reach you or your firm, Burke & Sullivan, for some legal guidance?
They need some guidance if they come to us, let me tell you that. We have a real estate firm, land use and real estate. Eddie does the criminal law and the practice of vehicle and traffic. But right here in Southampton, we're here, Burke & Sullivan, attorneys at law.
Okay, great. Judge, it's been an honor and a pleasure having you on the program.
This is John Christopher for Real Life on Peconic Public Broadcasting, 88.3, right here in Southampton, New York. By the way, if you're interested in hearing this program again or previous ones, you can go to peconicpublicbroadcasting.org and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, looking forward to seeing you soon, and have a safe journey.
You've been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people about the places and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, associate broker with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com.